Okay, good evening. Welcome everyone to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett, and I'm net control for today, October 20th, 2020. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 MHz. This is a designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness in a roundtable fashion, a variety of topics, including COVID-19. All amateur operators are welcome to participate in Emergency Preparedness Net. When you check in, make sure that you identify with your call sign slowly and phonetically, and also your name and location to be recognized by net control. Let's see if there's anybody on Echo Link that would like to check in first for the 529 emergency prayer. Come now, please. I don't hear anyone at Echolink. General check-ins, come now, please, for the emergency prep net.
Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa, Charlie, Mike, and Happy Valley. Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta, Richard in Salem.
In front of that, Everett, Salem.
Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta, Richard in Salem.
Let's pause there for just a second, Richard. I got you, Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta, but I believe you may have doubled with Everett. Everett, can you come back with your call, please?
That was KE7 Victor Whiskey X-ray.
Okay, we got Everett there. That's good. Kilo Echo 7 Victor Whiskey X-ray. Before FYD was Whiskey Zero Echo Delta Foxtrot, and then Mike started the group out. Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa, Charlie. Welcome all. Anybody else?
Good evening. This is Kilo, Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
Echo 7, Oscar Lima, Uniform Paul, Marion County, Northeast Salem.
Okay, there was Art, Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, and Paul, Kilo Echo 7, Oscar Lima, Uniform. I've been enjoying the newsletters from the University of Washington that Paul's son's department produces. They have a daily newsletter, and I think I put a notice of how to get in touch with those guys and sign up for the newsletter. It goes over it's called the COVID-19 Literature Situation Report, and so they go through all of the scientific articles and summarize them at the University of Washington, break them up into summaries, and then they have the links to the actual articles if you don't want to go that far. But really nice resource if you are interested in learning more about the science part. Anyway, thanks for Brian Guthrie, who's apparently one of the people in charge of that. That's good to know. Anybody else for the emergency prep net? Come now.
Hi, Brett. Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike, Steve, Albany.
Kilo Delta 7, Oscar Romeo, Steve Newberg.
Hello, Brett. Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform. Kilo India 7 Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, Allen in South Salem.
Kilo Foxtrot 7 Bravo Uniform Victor, Walton Woodburn.
Okay, there's a break in the action. Let's work backwards again. There was Walt, Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor. And then Alan, Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel. Dan was in there, Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform. We had Steve, Kilo Delta 7, Oscar Romeo. And another Steve, Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike. First Steve is from Newburgh area, and the other Steve is from Albany. Thanks all for checking in. Anybody else?
Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa. Charlie, I don't know whether I got checked in or not.
Yes, sir, Mike. Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa. Charlie, I worked backwards to the first group. You were the first one to check in tonight. Thank you for checking in. I did get you there. Okay, this is the emergency prep net, and we're still taking check-ins. Okay, not hearing anyone. I guess we can pause there for a bit. There's 12 of us here. Does anybody have any announcements for the net? Announcements come now.
Dodgers will win it.
The Dodgers are winning. Okay, that's a good announcement. Yeah, very good. Well, anyway, there's... Well, can't really tell what season it is. I guess all the sports are playing at the same time right now. So, okay, well, anyway, yeah, I got rid of my dish network, so that gives me an extra dish now to put on my use for the mesh. So I don't know what's going on with the sports lately. So does anyone else have any other announcements? We can do announcements for the net, you know, the nets and things like that on the repeater as well. I mean, Dan, you want to do announcements?
Sure, Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform. Thanks, Brett. Tomorrow night, we could certainly use at least one more participant in the slow scan net. It's been rather big here lately, and about one more person would probably round it out just right, so that could be you. We try to help people get started with it. It's a good entry into sound card modes. And it's kind of fun, rewarding to see. And every once in a while, the ISS is sending out slow scan images. So that's been a lot of fun over the last 6 months or so. It's only been about something like three or four times over the last 6 months, but very rewarding when it does to see that go over and see how the pictures come through. And Thursday night, we have the MeshNet, the Arden MeshNet at 7 o'clock. If you have any interest in that or if you want to know what it is, then come and ask if you have specific questions. That really helps. Of course, Monday through Friday, we have our 10 o'clock and 12 o'clock nets. At 10 o'clock, we have a technical net where we invite you to ask questions of either the net control or any of those that have checked in. Sometimes we have people listening that have better answers than what the net control has. You never know. Back to you, Brett. WA7ABU.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I guess you mentioned the Heritage Net. It seemed like there were lots of people on the Monday night Heritage Net. That seems to be a real popular thing to talk about these days. Yeah, don't forget that if you're a subscriber to the ARRL, you can read multiple journals on the air, including the QST magazine that everybody sort of knows and loves. You can also read the QEX magazine, the On the Air magazine. On the Air is the new magazine for new hams. And also the National Contest Journal, which I generally don't look at. But at any rate, lots of stuff going on there. Always new stuff to learn. I kind of like the On the Air magazine. It's does a very, very quick overview of ham related topics. So if you haven't looked at that, the thing in here on taking the ARRL's Intro to Emergency Communications course, since this is an emergency preparedness net, that might be something entry level course, it says, for those who available at no cost. They just want to become involved with or want to learn about the relationship between amateur radio and emergency communications. Anyway, it's called EC, Echo Charlie 001, and you can take a look at that. It's an entirely online test. It's available on demand, and you can takes about 45 hours. That says no starter end dates and no assignments. You have 6 sessions and 28 lesson topics and a 35-question final exam. That might be something to do. It says if you complete that, you're ready for a level 2 portion of the amateur radio emergency service, emergency communicator, individual task. Anyway, that's an resource. Is anyone out there taking this course, the EC-001? Well, I haven't either. So, anyway, that's why I was asking about it. I think Nate might have done that, the W7NAT. I don't know that he was all that impressed by it, but apparently he went through it. They do say that you should take, there are some FEMA classes, the ICS-100 class, which is Introduction to Incident Command, and the ICS-700 class, which is the National Incident Management System. So, again, you take those through FEMA, and they're, again, online free classes that you can take, and, you test yourself. So, I guess the first thing I want to talk about in terms of emergency, communications is just, why bother? Why should we, take these courses? What do you think why do they want us to take these things? For amateur radio operator, what do you think that they're trying to get at it? And if you've taken one, I know Paul's out there and he can answer these questions. I think he's taken all the different courses, but for the general person, if you've taken it, maybe tell me what you got out of it, and if you haven't taken it, why not?
CTC.
Mike, go ahead, please.
I have not personally taken any of the tests or anything, but am interested in that sort of thing. And it's good that we learn about them here on the this type of net. We're still considered a service. This is the Army, Navy service. If you've been, I'm in the service. Well, this is the amateur radio service. That's why they give us free license plates with our call on them and stuff. So I think it's a patriotic thing to do, and I think it's just a smart thing to do these days. This is K5 CPC back to the net.
Okay, very good. Well, that's a good intro. I do want to talk about this a little bit because it has, you know, as we're getting ready for, I think most of us as ham radio operators, we understand that we're given this responsibility for public service and using our radios. But, you know, that there are different organizations that you can join in helping out. There are some organizations that don't, you know, there are service organizations that help out in disasters that don't require radio at all. You know, you don't have to be, if you're a Red Cross volunteer, you don't have to do the radio. If you're a Salvation Army, you don't have to. But each one of these services has communicators that are their volunteers. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, there's actually a couple big ones that we've heard of, and maybe we can get to the differences. There's something called ARES, Amateur Radio Emergency Service. There's something called RACES, and there's something called the MARS program. Okay, those are sort of the three different ones that are the most commonly talked about. There's also you can belong to various other groups like the Saturn program, which is the Salvation Army, you know, weather watch team. You can be weather watchers. You know, you can be part of the Hurricane Watch Net. You can do what Dale does, which is to operate on the mobile maritime net, listening for distressed ships at sea. So there's lots of opportunities to join different organizations. So I'm trying to get to the point of sort of why join an organization and why do they make us take these classes and things?
Tell us.
Tell us, huh? Okay, well, I'll get Paul involved in this conversation as well. I think the first thing is that let's talk a little bit about this ICS thing, this Incident Command System, and the National and the NIMS system, National Incident Management System. So, as we know, they've been having wildfires years after years after years, you know, back in the 90s, I think it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, they realized that when everybody sort of was uncoordinated in terms of emergency response, they have a disaster and have multiple people show up, and then you have to figure out, like, who's in charge, and, you know, how do you structure yourself? How do you operate? You know, how do you... you know, pass messages, how do you, we need some sort of framework because people have a tendency to, they all want to help, but the point is that if everybody starts working in an uncoordinated fashion, then it just doesn't work very well. You know, if you have people who are, we call emergent volunteers, people who just sort of show up, you don't know who they are, what their training is, there actually can be a bit of a problem because you don't know what to do with them, and you have to do something with them because they want to help, right? So, you know, there's they created a whole structure, the National Incident Management System, and they came up with a set of rules to help people operate kind of in the same way. So it's part of it is one of the main key terms on it is called interoperability. That means that, you know, pretty much everybody does kind of the same thing. So if you've heard of interoperability, can anyone give me an example of something which is interoperable?
This is KJ7RKZ. Ham radio is interoperable.
I think I've got missed off the last part of your call. I got KJ7RK something or other. Can you come again and give me your name too, please?
Yes, my name is Steven, and I'm KJ7RKZ. Brand new licensee, still trying to figure out my equipment here. Sorry about that. but yeah, ham radio is a example.
Okay, so let's start with phonetics here because it's easier for me to understand. So I have Kilo Juliet 7, KJ 7, Romeo Kilo Zulu, is that correct?
Affirmative.
Okay, great. And do you like to go by Steve or Steven?
Steven.
Okay, so good, Steven. So, yes, ham radio has some interoperability characteristics, and we'll give some examples of that. One I just did, which is called ITU phonetics, okay? So ITU phonetics is an example of interoperability. Do you see why that is?
Affirmative.
So an example of that is that if you ever take a turn at being net control, and I hope you do, if someone uses different words for the sounds of the letters, if I said, you know, I don't know, it's even hard for me to do it wrong. If I gave your call sign as Kmart Jackie 7, let's see, Roger Kmart Zebra, you know, first it's hard to say it, and secondly you'd sort of go, wow, it's actually kind of distracting to hear it that way. Whereas, you know, if you hear it the same from everyone, they came up with these words, you know, through an international conference that said, well, these are all words that most, you know, everyone, all nationalities can pronounce, and they're, you know, clearly different words. Now, some of them are obviously English-based, but, you know, they're all ones that people pronounce and are easy to understand, especially if, you know, the situation is that you've got noise or something like that. So, yeah, so that Kilo Juliet 7, Romeo Kilo Zulu, you know, you just get used to using that. That's an example of interoperability. Okay, does anybody else have another example of interoperability? I'm sticking with the ham radio topic. What about frequencies? What are interoperable frequencies? Can you give me an example of something? Interoperability means it's something that's used by everyone and sort of understood to be a thing to do that everybody kind of knows how to do. So what about frequencies? Can you tell me some of those?
J7QQF, Kilo Juliet 7, Quebec Foxtrot, CW, Morse code.
Okay, so there's a mode that is interoperable if people agree to it. I was trying to think in terms of like frequencies. Are there common frequencies that you know? Like, does anybody know what the frequency for the APRS system is, automatic packet reporting system? So looking for like the 2 meter frequency. If you've ever been dialing around with 2 meters with the frequency mode, you'll and do a scan, you're undoubtedly going to hit something which sounds kind of squawky in the back as you go through, and that's APRS. In fact, it's pretty near this frequency's input. Anybody know that?
ABU?
Yeah, Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, the APRS is supposed to be on 144.39.
That's agreed upon frequency. There are some other packet frequencies, of course, that cluster around 145 and go out, I believe it's header KC both directions from 145. So it's nice to know those are set aside for packet. WA7ABU.
Okay, so good. So that's an example of a something that we all kind of understand. If we set up a frequency list, we know that that's something that we can go to in an emergency. If you have an APRS capable receiver, you can tune into 144.39 and you can listen. And you'll be actually surprised. You'll get weather reports and you'll get position reports from people that are driving around. You can send messages back and forth. And if you have one of the applications that's a mapping thing, you can actually see where those things are on a map. That's just an example of an interoperable technique for communicating. Now, another thing is that when you interoperability kind of, again, means sort of the formal definition is, the application of command, control, and the ability to coordinate the ICS system to enable the sections operating in a disaster to accomplish the same thing with other agencies. So it really had to do initially with the fact that there are different agencies involved in dealing with disasters, okay? So, again, if you're an amateur and you're trying to help out in a disaster, you actually need to have a little bit of training because that's the way it operates. If you had everybody, let's say there was a group of people who just, they wanted to be their own, relay system. But, they use, for example, their own forms and they, decided that, they wanted to use some weird digital mode or something, and that's what they did. Okay, well, that's fine, but you need to actually know who you're communicating with. People need to communicate with each other in a common way. And part of what we learned as, you have to learn first about what the incident command structure is. If there's a, and I won't get into all of it, it's just suffice it to say that it sets up some guidelines and it says that there is a leader, that whenever there's a disaster, someone comes in as a leader. The very first person on the scene of the disaster is the incident commander, and that means you, okay? So, for example, if you get on this radio sometime and there's something happening, there's some emergency, you've got, wind of in your neighborhood, and you get on the radio and you try to see what's going on, you're the incident commander. You're the net control for the station. So the incident commander is someone who takes charge of the situation until someone else comes along that can relieve them, that has more expertise or, availability. So, but the nice thing about an incident command system is it can be sort of expanded to handle complex things, or it could be as simple as, let's say you show up at, let's say someone is having a seizure, say, for example, in a store, okay? Well, you're the first person on the scene, all right? So you can get there and you can take charge of that thing, and you can say, okay, and, you can take care of the person, look at them, and then tell someone else to dial 911. Now, why don't you want to dial 911? Because you're the incident commander. So you get someone else to dial 911 because they're going to make them stay on the line with the 911 operator until they'll tell them what to do. Okay, so that would be like just a little two-person command system where you have one person as the communicator and one person as the incident commander. Now, if someone else shows up and they decide, oh, well, this person's actually having a heart attack, then, we might ask for somebody else, a specialist, to come in and, say, operate the defibrillator. It might be somebody in the store that knows how to do that. But anyway, someone takes charge, and they assign responsibilities to people, So, and things start out that way. Okay, so anyway, interoperability. So another thing that they do is they try to, you know, you learn about trying to avoid abbreviations. And this is something that government doesn't do a very good job of. We have abbreviations, acronyms for everything, right? Every single thing, FEMA, you know. Well, even the training, ICS, it's an acronym, okay? But when you're doing emergency communications, a couple things you need to remember as a communicator is you need to not put abbreviations. You need to find out what it is. If it's, you can define it in the message, but if you say, you know, your favorite abbreviation, whatever, there's a lot of different abbreviations that use the same thing. You know, CAD is an example. I found out that CAD, you know, which is computer-aided design, now that also is computer-assisted dispatch, which is an emergency term. So if someone says, you know, get your CAD program out and, you know, help out, want you to help out with the CAD program so during this emergency, they're probably not wanting to know how to work your milling machine. They probably are thinking about, you know, dispatch, okay? So, you know, if they're talking about dispatch, they should say the word dispatch. That's just another example of an interoperability, using the same language and trying to be clear. So, you know, when you join one of these, you know, take these courses and stuff, you learn this sort of framework. And I guess the important thing is that, you know, we need to understand this. Otherwise, we're not very helpful, actually, because they can't really use us. If we're going to have to, you know, talk to other officials and get official information to them, reports and what have you, we need to learn kind of how to play the game so that they can take us, take our information and use it, right? Okay, let's pause here. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. This is emergency preparedness set. Let's see if anybody else out there wants to check in at this time.
Kilo Juliet 7, Quebec. Whiskey Kilo checking in on the Salem Repeater out of Vancouver, Washington.
Okay, I got Kilo Juliet 7, Quebec, Whiskey Kilo, and Fred, right?
You are correct. This is Fred, Kilo Juliet 7, Quebec, Whiskey Kilo.
So we've been talking about, anybody else, actually, just to double check in, anybody else want to check in for the emergency preparedness now? We're talking a little bit about, you know, learning to be communicators, learning to help out in emergencies, and maybe taking advantage of some training opportunities, and learning a little bit about how it works at a national level. But let's see if anybody else wants to check in here. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Okay, not hearing anyone. Okay, so anyway, I don't want to spend too long on this. I just want to say that when we, whatever you decide to do with a hobby, it's just like, you know, everybody has different interests, right? And, but I think that we all have this idea that as amateur radio operators, we're going to be able to help out in an emergency. And, you know, part of it is learning the technique. I can tell you, you know, of just practicing with your radio. I think that there's a lot to be gained by, you know, participating in NETS and getting to know people in the area, because we're going to need to help each other. So one of the things that's another principle of emergency preparedness is that when there's a disaster, and I've talked about this before, there's a difference between an emergency and a disaster. And it doesn't have to do with, you know, necessarily numbers of you know, people dying or whatever. It has to do with, do you have enough resources to deal with an emergency, okay? So you can roughly define an emergency as a, you know, an incident that involves, you know, threat of to life or property, okay? That's sort of a general term, all right, for an emergency. Could be anything, you know, but well, we normally think of emergencies, something that threatens life or property is what we're looking at. And, of course, there's first responders, and there's 911 and things like that that you call. That would be one of the first things that you do as a citizen if you observe something, is that you'll call the people who are the first responders and let them deal with the emergency. So that's good, all right? And if they come, that's great, and we are pretty good at that. We have when we have single incidents, and people come when they call, and all of our communication systems work. That's called emergency preparedness, and hopefully that's the way it always works. But what if you don't have the resources that you need? Resources can be people. It can be things like equipment. Like if you have a battery need and your radio runs out of batteries and you're in the middle of a net and it's an important net, you know, that's kind of a disaster because you don't have the resources to carry out the function that you're trying to do. And if that function involves, you know, saving people's property or lives or, you know, health or whatever, you know, then that's a disaster. A single battery can be a disaster, right? So the question is, when we do preparedness, is we want to try to make sure that we can gather together resources of people. Sorry, timed out there, KG7GDB. People or things or, you know, later on maybe money is another resource that you need, or training is kind of a resource. Trained people are probably the most important
time. Timer, cancel.
Oops, I timed it out totally that time. I apologize. Okay, so let's try this again. So if we, again, if it's a disaster, if we don't have the resources needed to deal with it. If we have the resources needed, then it's an emergency, okay? And we're, our, you know, we have pretty good, the government's reasonable at doing emergency response. We have good first responders and what have you, but in a disaster means that they're not coming, okay? They could be a while, all right? And so that's what we have when we have a bunch of things happening and we're overwhelmed and there's everybody's trying to go all different places. Then you have to start thinking about taking care of yourself, your family, your property, your neighbors, what have you. And I think that's a good rule for the, you know, the ham radio operator who has a great backup communication system, which is why we're here. Okay, are any comments so far on, you know, so I guess the comments, questions at this point, you know, do you feel like there's a some organization that you could join? I don't know, we want to do Aries or Mars. Anybody tell me the difference between Mars and Aries? ABU. Yeah, go ahead. I don't mean the Greek gods here, Roman gods. Go ahead. no fair saying Mars is the Roman god of war and Aries is the Greek god of war. Go ahead.
Although that might be a little clue, Mars is a military-affiliated group, and ARES is the ARRL-affiliated group, W7ABU.
Yeah, very good. So you can look these things up. But, so Mars is like military auxiliary radio system, and it is, again, sponsored by the military, and they used to have one for each of the different corps. The main one now is U.S. Army and U.S. Air Force. They used to have a Navy Marine one, but that is no longer operating. Anyway, it's a civilian program, consisting of licensed ham radio operators. They are trying to be the liaison between military frequencies and, operations and public. And so does anybody know, why would we need that? What's the issue? Can the military just call us up on our amateur radio frequencies? And this goes back to interoperability. Is there any way how would we normally help? Let's say if the military needed our help and wanted ham radio operators to help us, how's that happen? Do they use the same frequencies?
Kilo Juliet 7 Quebec, Whiskey Kilo Control.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just reading this, but Mars is using HF over UHF VHF, so no, they're not going to use the same UHF VHF frequencies, if I'm correct.
Yeah, so you might have heard that the about a Mars mod on a radio. Does anybody know what that is? What's a Mars mod, and why would you need it?
SRP.
Let's see, Ben. I don't think I've checked you in yet. Let's see. Whiskey Bravo 6, Sierra Romeo Papa. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the Mars frequencies are outside of the ham bands, and they got their own frequencies to operate on. And if you're a U.S. ham and you get a Mars call, then you have permission from Mars to be able to operate outside of the ham bands.
Okay, good. And so what frequencies are they operating on then?
They're outside of the 2-meter band.
Right. Well, definitely outside the 2-meter band, but normally we're thinking about HF frequencies for them, and I don't mean, you don't have to know what those frequencies are. Just know that they're military frequencies, okay? So we can't, as hams, talk on military frequencies, and they can't talk on our frequencies. So sometimes what they do is they call an interoperability exercise. So an interoperability exercise has to do with, can you get cooperate with the ham radio community and get that information to the military, okay? So, so that's one of the ways you do it. You get you license some people and you enroll them in the Mars program, and then you let them use some of the military frequencies and some of the military digital schemes. There's something called ALE, automatic ALE. It's a type of packet that is a error-corrected system that does some kind of neat stuff. It flips around to different bands and lets you send messages to specific people, which is fairly helpful. And they learn to do that as Mars people. And one of the things that we've been asked to cooperate with is is doing reports, getting reports from hams and passing them to Mars people, who subsequently pass them to the military. So another form of interoperability, and you're welcome to join Mars if that sounds interesting to you.
And wouldn't the mesh be used to transfer those messages?
Yep, KG7GB. Well, one way that we do message transfer, I mean, the mesh itself is an amateur radio frequencies. So, again, the military can't use our mesh system directly. They would need a Mars operator or an amateur to help them. But one of the things that has come up, again, is the ability to sort of operate and get messages, official messages, to into the government system. So, let's see, last month, I just was reading about this thing, Winlink, the people that do Winlink, participated in an exercise where they sent messages to a something called the SHARES program. Okay, and they wanted a way to inject the public service emergency announcements and get those on HF and use and pass those along to the military. So they were using the Winlink system for that. Okay, so there's two programs one's called SHARES, which is a Homeland Security program, and the other one called IPAWS, that's Integrated Public Awareness System, which is the thing that does the emergency alerts, things like that. So ham radio operators were able to actually pass information from the Homeland Security to and the public alert system using Winlink. Okay, so anyway, the point of these exercises is that when we have different responsibilities, but we do have to, you know, use the public, get information to and from the public, using different agencies that have their own kind of radio system set up, and when you start wanting to cross the from system to system, we run into a little bit of trouble because, for example, we can't just get on the public service frequencies and talk to the police directly with our radios. That's not allowed, right? So, on the other hand, emergency management departments often will issue you a public service radio with some channels on it that are commercial channels that are licensed for use by public emergency managers and the volunteers, right? So another way of doing this kind of thing is you can get authorization from a sponsoring agency like an emergency management department or a fire department. They might give you a radio, and Walt's on there too. He's got that going on. Let's see. Walt, so tell us a little bit about your public radios. KF7B, are you still there?
Public service radios, yeah. We have some hand-me-downs from the fire department, and right now we've got like 28 UHF radios. What we're doing right now is we're actually waiting for the final paperwork for our own frequencies as well and our own repeater so that we can deal with all that. The other side of it is we've got 45 or so VHF headed our way as well. We should have those
probably around the end of the year, so we're kind of set to go both ways with it.
Okay, so again, as an example of, you know, interoperability here, so what's the issue with the public service radio? Can I use one of these radios? Who gets to use these radios normally?
Well, we're using them because of the fact that it's the CERT, and CERT is sponsored here by the local fire department. So that's why we've got them. Some of the other people on CERTs in other areas, there's some Marion County frequencies on there, but they're like, don't use my frequency, don't use my frequency. So that's why we're getting our own.
Okay, so there's, again, another reason there is that you see different agencies. That's where this goes back to the whole incident command system. Different agencies have different ways of doing stuff, and we need to figure out a way to be interoperable. So one way you can be interoperable with the fire department, at least in Woodburn, is that Woodburn works with people in CERT. So if you go ahead and get the CERT training and you become part of CERT, then you'll be able to help the fire department using their public service radios. Now, that's not something we normally can do as ham radio operators. We cannot use public service radios unless we are asked to do so or issued them, right? So, and there isn't a way to call the fire department unless you're using public service radios. So that's another one of these things very similar to Mars. By the way, your call sign is Mars in Oregon. Were you a Mars volunteer too there, Walt?
No, that's got something to do with something like 30, 40 years ago. that still comes back to haunt me sometimes. Nothing to do with that at all.
Okay, well, don't be surprised if they come sign you up. So the other thing I want to mention is, and there was an article again about this, and they're sort of revisiting the idea of there's one HF band that is interoperable. Who can tell me which band it is that the government, the military, and ham radio operators can use, all have privileges on? It's a hint. It's an HF frequency. Yeah, Richard, go ahead. That's correct. Yes, the 60-meter band is the one band that, yeah, FEMA and the government and the military, you know, and amateur operators all can use, okay? It's unique in that sense. There's no other band that we share because it's the band privileges are separated. So, again, sort of learning to be involved with different exercises and different agencies, we have to practice these things. And there's different exercises that are available. There's a FEMA exercise that happens, I think, once a month on, like, the third Wednesday, where they do a VoiceNet check-in on Channel 1, and they do a digital net on Channel 2 on the channelized, they have five channels on the 60 megahertz, or sorry, 60-meter band there, around 5.3-something-something. They're channelized, and you need a modern radio or presets that will actually transmit in the band. It's fairly recent that these radios have been made. So there's another interoperability for you using a particular frequency. Okay, so another comment about, well, I guess we can see if there's anybody else has any other comments or any check-ins at this time. We've got about 5 minutes left. We've been talking about, you know, being involved with different emergency communications groups and with the purpose of interoperability in an emergency situation, being able to help out. You've got to kind of know how this stuff works. And, you know, just getting on the radio and talking on 2 meters, you know, may not help officially. It might help a little bit in terms of coordinating your own group of people in your neighborhood, and, you know, but even what we do as a net, learning how to use a net, being in net control, is an important skill that's an interoperable skill. By setting up our nets formally so that, you know, we have some person in charge that, you know, takes the check-ins and lets people take turns, you know, we avoid a real problem with our radios and the fact that we, you know, it's easy to talk over each other when we're all on simplex and not be able to hear. So we got to be able to do that. So that's another technique that is an interoperable technique, is using NET. Okay, anybody else want to check in or any comments? Kind of running out of time here.
Yeah, Brett, late check-in, KA7JLO, Jeff here in Albany.
Okay, well anyway, I just wanted to bring that up again that, you know, we want to be able to use our radios, but it is useful to learn a little bit about kind of what people are doing, to learn about, there's a good book, by the ARRL, it's called the Operating Manual, the ARRL Operating Manual, and it talks about a lot of these different things that you can do with ham radio. It's try to find a newer edition, but, you know, there's various ways that we can help out, and there's various, you know, activities we can do on a radio while having fun and doing things. So, you know, if you, for example, may not have been on 60 meters, you might learn how to build a 60-meter antenna for yourself. You know, it does have an advantage that it's still one of these NVIS bands, so it's real good for getting over the hills, and a low-wire antenna works great. There's a power limit on it, so you're not going to get stomped on by people. It's a pretty good band, actually. You can still use it as long as there's no emergency going on. So, anyway, 60 meters is something that if you haven't tried, I encourage you to do that. Winlink is another thing that you can do without even, you know, belonging to any other group. I encourage you to use Winlink. Every amateur operator can get a Winlink account. What is Winlink? Who can tell me real quick? Does anyone not know what Winlink is? We have a new ham here, Stephen, KJ7RKZ. Do you know what Winlink is? We seem to have lost Stephen. Winlink is amateur radio email, an email system that uses radios and different modulation schemes to send email, okay? And primarily it started out on Windows computers, which is why it was called Winlink, and you can still, probably the easiest software to use is a Windows software program called Winlink Express, which is free. It's actually shareware, but, you know, they don't bother you about it. They'd like a donation. But it's a program that allows you to compose email, and you just have to register your call sign. Your priority, you know, has to be an amateur radio call sign, and as such, you're entitled to an account, and you put a password in. You can do that on the website winlink.org. That's Whiskey India November Lima India November Kilo dot Oscar Romeo Golf. Go there. Set up an account, and then you download the program, and you put your information in, your name and address and call in the registration form there, and then you can start sending Winlink messages. And first thing you do is you can send them on the computer. That's called Telnet. You can send a Telnet message. And it's regular email. It goes out. But it is interesting. It is not encrypted. And in general, it'll come with an attachment at the bottom that says this is for amateur radio use. And although it will send to people's phones and things like that, when they try to return your message, you actually have to approve them to get that message back. You have to either have a whitelist or approve that message, or that keeps all of the spam out of the system. But I encourage you to learn how to use that, because if you're using other kinds of digital modes, you can use it with Winlink as well. Okay, so for those of you who are that like to do FlowScan TV on Wednesday night, you can do Winlink on your FlowScan TV setup. How do you do that? I helped Alan get something going on with his radio. So, anybody tell me how could you use your FlowScan TV setup to do a Winlink message instead? Okay, I guess I got to tell you guys all the answers tonight. So the thing is that any sound card audio mode, you know, you just a different program, you can do different modulation types, right? So the basic modulation type that we use on Winlink, like 2-meter Winlink, is something called packet, right? And I think you've all heard of packet. If you haven't heard of packet, then we'll have to talk about that on the TechNet or something. But packet is one of the basic modulation schemes. It involves frequency shift keying, and it can work on FM, so it's fine for 2 meters, right? So at any rate, when we're doing FlowScan TV, we're just doing different modulations of sound. Now, it turns out that there's something called a sound modem, or TNC, that produces a special kind of packet modulation. And you can just download that for your computer, and it will produce the packet sounds, just like the old Cantronics TNC did. You don't need to, these days, have a TNC, although it'll work, or you don't have something built into your radio. You just have to have that sound card mode, signal link, or whatever you have that makes the sound. And you just need to put a one of two programs on Windows. Is one is called UZ7HO, Uniform Zulu 7 Hotel Oscar, the sound modem. The current version is 105, and or the another one called Dire Wolf, which is a DIREWOLF Delta India Romeo Echo Whiskey Oscar Lima Foxtrot. Those two programs make packet sounds that are suitable for sending packet and for sending Winlink. Okay, so with that, you know, you can send, you know, a message. You can send it peer-to-peer, that's to another person, using the same frequency that you are, or you have this program, which knows where all of the local stations are that are set up to receive this email, and you need to just do it. It's a simplex frequency, and you send the information, compose an email, you post it to the outbox, and then you pick the packet Winlink modulation scheme, and fire away. It makes the connection, and it sends your email. And then if there's any email waiting for you, it downloads the email onto your computer. So it goes out through a system of servers that are based on the Amazon servers and around the world. And you can get into it for a variety of different frequencies, HF, VHF, and different schemes to get in there. But that's an interoperable system for email that's used by most of the emergency preparedness groups around the world, as well as sailors and people that ships at sea and things like that. So it's one that you guys should practice with, even if you're not involved with an agency. You'll be ready to talk to somebody using Winlink because that's interoperable. KG7, GDB, any final comments or questions on that?
Kilo, Juliet 7, Quebec, Whiskey Kilo, Control.
Yeah, go ahead, Fred.
You know, I've been learning a little bit about all these various data protocols for sending email or sending, images, and that makes sense to me. I haven't used many of them yet. I'm wondering if there isn't just a protocol for representing a general internet connection in which you can utilize multiple services using the same kind of frequency and less, or I guess a TCP/IP implementation that works over the radio.
So one of the things, one of the problems that you run into, even with Winlink, is that how do you tell the person on the other end which scheme you're using? Okay, you have to sort of agree in advance that, okay, I'm going to be listening for you and I'm going to be on this frequency, and I'm going to, have my program running so I can receive your stuff. Now you can take a program like FLDigi. FLDigi is probably the closest thing to what you're saying, where you can use different modulation schemes on the same frequency. And it has kind of a special feature on it. You can transmit an ID at the beginning. There's a little button at the top, and it's something called a Reed-Solomon identifier, RSID button that you click on the top, and it can tell what modulation scheme you're using and switch your software to that scheme and allow you to receive the message. So that's done a lot, like during field day, the ARL will send a message to you and they'll say, okay, it's gonna, they'll use the same frequency, but they'll play, for example, CW maybe first, and then they'll do PSK31, and then they'll do MFSK 32 or those are kind of the schemes they might use. So anyway, when you have that program, it switches modes because they're transmitting that identifier. So that might be the closest thing. Otherwise, if you can't change modes, then you won't be able to receive the message.
Kilo Julie, 7 Quebec Whiskey Kilo. Thanks for that answer. I appreciate it. I'm going to give FLDigi a try. I've been using WSJTX for FT8. I kind of like that.
Very good. And so, anyway, the setup that you have for WSJTX will work for FLDigi too. You just can't run both programs at the same time. Usually they sort of take over your COM ports. But there are nets that practice this stuff. There's one that's in Oregon called the ORCA net, Oregon California net. They practice passing messages using FLDigi. It might be on Friday nights. So you can look up ORCA net, like the whale, or it stands for Oregon California, and see what they're doing and what their schedule is. So that's an HF net. There's lots of different schemes. Winlink itself, Winlink Express, has different modulation schemes that it can do. And the way it gets around it is it lists all the stations that when you put up a station, you say, I'm going to be on this frequency, and I have there's a software called Tri-Mode, which can switch modes and use different modulation schemes. So that's, again, a way of doing it. But you know that if you're, out on that frequency, you sort of double-click on it, and it sets your frequency for you and sends the message and hopefully works. So Winlink's a good one to practice on, and so is FLDigi. So I think that's about all I can talk about tonight. I got to about 10 after 8 here, so we better quit for tonight. Let me close the net out here. Okay, the time is now 8:10 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. I don't know if Richard is going to be recording this one, but we have any recordings available of the Emergency Preparedness Nets available on the Whiskey Alpha 7 Alpha Bravo Uniform groups.io page. Yeah, WA7AB groups.io. If you're not a member of the groups.io yet, that's a good thing to do. Go to WA7ABU.com and click on the upper left corner that says join the group and go over there and sign up. And look at the file section. You'll find recordings of these emergency preparedness nets. So this net meets each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz. Thanks to Dan, WA7ABU, for the use of the repeater. Thanks to all who participated tonight and those who stood by to give us a clear channel. Let's see, next week I won't be available. I'll try to check in via the EchoLink system, but I won't be able. Actually, I won't be doing my nets this week. I'm kind of busy out of town this week, so I'll be checking in with EchoLink, but not being net control. Anyway, I'm going to close the net now. It's 8:11 or 8:12 p.m. We now return the repeater to normal amateur operations. Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. I'm clear.